Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Corolla Drinks fans, 818 Rye Whiskey is available now at CorollaDrinks.com. 818 is a whiskey from Adam's backyard, not the gated communities in the same area code. It's aged 3 years in new American oak and couples a malty sweetness with a complex rye finish. Adam and the team made this whiskey for fans of the show. They made this whiskey for the regulars. Get your bottle of 818 Rye at CorollaDrinks.com. Hurry, we will sell out.
Well, in this episode of Reasonable Doubt, we have a lot of laughs. It's a very funny episode. We'll get into what's going on with Disney and Black Widow and back ends and trademarks for Cleveland. What were they?
Guardians. The Indians before.
Right. Well, maybe they're going back to Indians. Lots of stuff to get into, including some hijinks involving Mark's private plane. First, let's hear about Morning Wire. America's trust in the media is at an all-time low. So-called respected news channels are state propaganda and virtue signaling with blatant disregard for the truth. Well, good news. And by the way, it's an insult to your intelligence. So our friends at the Daily Wire are providing an alternative. Morning Wire. It's a morning news podcast that gives you the facts first. The latest in politics, sports, culture, and education with a heavy emphasis on truth. I subscribe to this. I listen to it. It's quick. There's a little bite-sized, I don't know, 15, 17 minutes. And they'll give it to you from both angles. It's not just a right-leaning news outlet. It's brought to you by the Daily Wire editor-in-chief, John Bickley, and co-host, Georgia Howe. Episodes drop every weekday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Subscribe now, and you can hear the trailer. And if you like it, leave a five-star review. Help Daily Wire provide a source Americans can wake up to and trust.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a choice, but get on a mandate. Get it on. Welcome to the best hour or so in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Mark Garagus at his home office.
I was supposed to be in studio, and I was just bemoaning the fact that but for some big firm lawyers who were obviously billing by the hour, I literally took a conversation that could have been done in about 3 minutes, and we must have dissected it in 400 different ways over 90 minutes to come to the same conclusion that we would have had 35 seconds into this thing.
Yeah, I've found myself doing that. I'm the same way as you. I'm in a hurry all the time. There's always something else to do. And then B, redundancy just feels like the worst use of your time ever. And I've spent the last year on conference calls and Zoom meetings and stuff like that. And first things first, everyone understand that when people use catchphrases like, okay, then, or will do, or okay, so the next time we talk, well, when they start, they are trying to wind this fucking thing down. Do not open new chapters on new ideas and new conversations. And I always wonder, I used to feel the same way when I was in junior high, and it'd be 3 o'clock on a Friday, and the history teacher would be going, all right, everyone just go out and have a good weekend and play it safe. So, enjoy yourself. And then someone would raise their hand and they'd go, any reading assignments over the weekend? Oh, yeah, yeah. No. Right. We the People, chapter 13 through 19. Thank you, Sheldon. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, 13 through 19. I was like, what? Don't raise your fucking hand.
I have a tendency to have people tell me, oh, you're in a hurry. No, I'm not in a hurry. It's just, why are we going to belabor this for so long?
I don't know. I realize.
I don't understand it.
People may hate you and I for the same reasons, but like when my assistant calls and he goes, Yeah, they were going to shoot that thing this afternoon on the motivational thing, but the crew canceled, so we're not going to shoot it anymore because they said that, next. What's next? And they go, well, don't you want to hear why they can't do it? I'm like, no, it's not happening. Moving on. You know, my other thing, I got to tell you, one of the stories that's weird with this is when I worked for KLSX, CBS Radio, you're in the corporate world. And at some point they go, look, you have to have the person come speak to you on diversity. So that just means Esther Rolls' fat sister showing up with the beads and the koofy, and she's going to give you a long-winded fucking discussion about shit you already knew, but it's going to take 2 hours. And I said to my entire crew, I said to them, you fuckers, no one say a word. Nobody, do not raise your hand. No fucking questions. I don't want her to go, oh, that remind me. Yes, there's a lot of inequity in badminton. Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. Do not. You sit there because this thing could take 60 minutes or it could take 2.5 hours if you ask a bunch of dopey questions and act like you're engaged. Do not remain silent. Just let her go. Let her go through it. Just let her get through it. Well, about 40 minutes in, she was explaining that if there was a robbery of a liquor store and the call went out, that it was a male Hispanic, was that appropriate to say his heritage, to say his ethnicity on the call? And everyone sat there and was silent like I told them to be. And she goes, no, it is not, because there are many other Hispanics in Los Angeles, and why should they be lumped in with this Hispanic gentleman? So in a way, you've crossed protocol, you've breached his rights. And is essentially a form of racism to say an Hispanic male robbed the liquor store. Does everyone understand? And my whole crew was silent, but I couldn't take it anymore. And my hand shot up and I said,
who became Sheldon?
I said, why do we have to say he's male? And she went, what? And I went, male. I'm male. There's males here. There's males in Los Angeles. Why are we getting lumped in with his gender? And she goes, well, because he's male. I said, he's Hispanic, too. Well, what's the difference? And everyone looked at me like, oh, hey, boss. I thought you said you were going to shut up the whole time.
You were ahead of your time as the cisgender.
I know.
You were way ahead of you. How many? That had to be 15 years
ago.
Oh,
man, at least. All right, so we have to take care of personal.
I've got a couple of questions,
yes.
And I don't know if they're legal, but I thought of you with the Olympian who withdrew.
Simone Biles? Yeah.
Right. And I was, you know, was at first it was being reported as mental health. But then I actually heard either her or somebody say it was the twisties. And that gave me, because I've always wondered in watching her, because it's incredible how she does what she does. And I can understand twisties. Can you understand twisties?
I absolutely can. I wonder, my suspicion is she sort of started initially by saying, I'm just not feeling it. And at some point somebody got hold of her and said, don't say you're not feeling it. You have to say you got a bad knee or the twisties, or we need something that we could look up in a medical textbook, because saying I'm just not feeling it sounds like you're a bad teammate or you're a quitter or, unpatriotic or whatever it is. So it's interesting to me that she went from sort of not feeling it to the twisties, at least as I understand it, because you would never do that if you had a bad joint. So if you just had, if you're playing quarterback and you just had a knee that wouldn't go, you'd say, I can't start. It's my knee. You wouldn't go, I can't start. I'm not feeling it. And then the next day get a bunch of heat for saying you're not feeling it and then go, oh, my knee. I didn't tell you it was my knee. That would be the first. I'm curious as to why the twisties wasn't the first thing out of her
right,
mouth.
Right, because it made immediate sense to me when they said twisties. I got it.
I don't know if she was lying. I don't know if somebody got to her. I don't know what the story is. Look, she's a champion. she's the best of all time. Far be it from me to criticize, but I do wonder how it got from sort of not feeling it to a condition. That's the only part.
I was worried. I just didn't understand. It made perfect sense. Like you said, she's probably the greatest, if not the greatest, of all time. And not just in her sport. I mean, she's done things that have never been done before. But I did not understand how that kind of became such a thing in the initial day. Except that's the world we live in. That there's always got all those who can't are hacking away at people who can.
Well, I think the problem in today's society is we don't right or left, one side or the other, forget about even politics, but we can't just keep walking. You know what I mean? Like she's an Olympic athlete. She saw fit to pull herself out of the competition. That's her business. We don't really need to assign a bunch of stuff to it. So what happens is a whole bunch of people at the New York Times start saying she's a hero. She's a hero because she didn't succumb to the pressure of the male-dominated, you know, culture we live in with the blah, 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 blah. And then a bunch of people on the other side of the aisle go, oh, she's not a hero. She quit. And the next thing you know, it's on. Right now, we have an argument going on.
I can't. And it's like, hello. I mean, if you put the time in that she's put in and you have the skill set that she's got and, you know, recognize it is what it is. I mean, don't you admire people who kind of break the mold and are the great, you know, the goats?
But to me, the larger question is Mark Garagos wants to walk down his horse trail without a mask and Joe Blow wants to walk down the horse trail with a mask. That's all. We're done. There's no reason to cross-pollinate here. We don't need to discuss why or when or who's not or why, what if. It's just, that's it. Keep walking, literally. Just keep walking. Not everything needs to be broken down. You know why? Because there's too much to break down.
Yeah,
every day there's a new thing to break down and then inject a bunch of politics or race or social whatever on. Just at a certain point, you got to keep walking.
Well, speaking of walking, well, I saw the picture on Twitter of you at the fire station. That's the one right there at the corner, is it not?
Yeah, in Malibu. That's the Malibu one. Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah. I mean, that's a spectacular location. It's a prime piece of property, isn't it?
Oh, my God. The first thing I did was all the houses that run along PCH that run along the ocean side, you'll see some pop up for sale, you know, asking price $57 million. I mean, you could get it for $48.5, but they're asking $55-$57, you know. A bungalow in that stretch of Carbon Beach is $10 million bucks, you know, for 1,400 square foot and needs a remod. And I walked into that firehouse, and I was standing in the kitchen. I could see the ocean. And I was like, where do you guys sleep? And the guy goes, upstairs. Otherwise, the fire pole would have to go horizontally. And I said, I wonder if anyone's ever made that joke before. The one-story fire station with the horizontal fire pole. But I saw the fire pole when I walked in. All right, okay. You guys are upstairs. I go, upstairs, where you sleep. Yeah. Can you see? You get a full ocean view. The guy goes, oh, yeah. I'm like, this is the best gig ever. And you know, you can work at the Costco in Malibu, but you don't live there. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Exactly. These guys live there. They stare at the ocean every day.
I know. It's unbelievable. And they're revered. And they should, as they should be, right?
Oh, I always talk about, you know, the professions that attract the personalities, you know, lowest on the list, publicist, you know, those amongst the worst people I've ever met in my goddamn life, you know, lawyers, close second, Mark. I mean, it just keeps going up from there, right? Eventually you get to pedophile, but the point is,
as you're climbing the ladder
of people you want to spend time with, but a fireman, man, at the top, because they have this great, they're dudes, but they also have to have knowledge. They have to be professional. They have to have training, but they're easy, but they're kind of jocks from high school, but they're not bullies. You know what I mean? They're patriotic. It's a great combo.
I had a judge once, many years ago, Judge John Fisher, used to be a DA and then on the bench, and he was in Van Nuys, and we were picking a jury, and we were doing it kind of in the hallways behind. And first there was a woman named Milken, and we asked to step in the hallway, and I explained to the judge, I said, I'm going to guess that she says she can't sit on this jury because her husband's being prosecuted. And sure enough, it was Michael Milken's wife, I think. It was.
Wow.
And then the next one up was a fireman, and he came back and was just a wonderful guy. You know how immediately you could just tell I forget what the excuse was, but it was a valid excuse. But within 30 seconds, you instantly liked the guy. And he walked back in the jury veneer, and Judge Fisher turned to me and he says, what is it about firemen? They're just wonderful people. And I said, tell me about it. So I think I went on to buy the old firehouse in downtown and just love firemen. I just think it's it's an amazing profession.
It's basically all the good qualities of a cop with none of the baggage of the cop, you know, like
interesting cops, way to look at it. Right.
The guys that are attracted to being cops are attracted for several good reasons, but sometimes some bad reasons. And this is like a profession where you're just attracted to it for good reasons. All right. We have your jet plane to talk about, which I definitely do not want to miss. But we also have subjects, and I feel like we've been waxing poetic about
personal things. We've been waxing poetic because I miss you and I haven't seen you. So maybe Sunday when you get back, we'll meet up at Los Gringos or something.
Oh, yeah. Head down to the Malibu Fire Station. All right. So, Gary, do you have a subject?
What are we going to – we've got to speak legal as opposed to Adam and I waxing poetic about.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no shortage of topics to get into. I think that we should touch on the Scarlett Johansson fight with Disney. That's definitely been in the news lately. And then one of Mark's associates, who focuses a lot on sports law, has been giving a lot of coverage to the fact that the Cleveland Indians, now the Cleveland Guardians, may have announced their name without doing some of their due diligence, and it might end up costing them quite a bit of money. And I think we should dive into that a little as well.
All right, let's do Scarlett first, because I really don't know this case.
Yeah, so the broad strokes of it, and I'm sure Mark can get into more details, is that Scarlett Johansson ended up with a contract to do the movie Black Widow, and part of her contract was points on the back end, and as a result of the pandemic, Disney Plus decided they were going to release it both in theaters but simultaneously on Disney Plus. So you still have to buy it on Disney Plus. It's a premiere thing, so you have to spend some money on it. But what Scarlett is saying is that because the executives at Disney have their bonuses tied to the numbers of Disney Plus, it is in their best interest to put it on Disney Plus. That will bolster the Disney Plus numbers. And Scarlett's contract is exclusive to the money made in theaters, which will be demonstrably hurt by the fact that people can watch it.
All right.
Home.
I heard about that aspect of it because, and if memory serves, but I saw it. It's an entertaining movie. Everyone did a great job. It got out of the gate, I think, $80 million its first week. A good box office opening, especially during these times. And normally, they have their algorithms and their charts, and they know if you get out of the gate at $80 million, then the following weekend, you're going to do 72% of whatever you did the first week. So we can look at my 58 million bucks or something like that. You know, they have a rhythm and it works. If a movie makes 100 million bucks its first week, it makes 70 million bucks its next week. And then the third week, it makes 49 million bucks and they can chart it. Well, this movie does 80 million bucks the first week at the box office where Scarlett is getting her back end. And she's probably pretty happy about that because we already know the next week it's going to be $60 million. Well, the next week it's $20 million because they launch it on Disney Plus. And I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but that's basically what happened. So now this the fact that people can stay home and watch it versus get and go to the theater where Scarlett gets paid has been undone by Disney launching it on Disney Plus.
It's also interesting, and I'd love to hear Mark's analysis on this. This has been an issue throughout the pandemic, and so far Stars have apparently been able to negotiate with the studios and get some sort of a change in compensation to prevent lawsuits like this from happening. Scarlett Johansson was not successful in those attempts, so she filed this lawsuit. And what I would like Mark's thoughts on, in Disney's response, they put her salary for the film before the back end out in a statement publicly, which is not something you usually would see studios or agencies disclosing in a public manner like that.
And Gary, you can see first week versus second week.
It was a 67% drop in the second week, which is lower than normal. It's usually, like you said, supposed to be more in the 70s would be week two. For this movie, it was 67.
Well, wait a minute. 60, sorry, Mark, he'll look it up. A 67% drop or 67% of what the first one was?
The latter. 67% of $80 million is what week two made.
All right, versus 80% or whatever it normally makes.
Correct.
So it wasn't that big. I mean, it went from $80 million to $47 million or something or whatever it is, but it was a bigger drop than normal. And what she's saying is I should get the back end of what that drop was, you know?
Right. And now, but the question is how is the clause written? I mean, I can't imagine, well, maybe I can, but why wasn't that built into the contract?
John Berlinski is her attorney. He's from Cassowitz, Benson, and Torres. And I would imagine, Mark, just based on how these movies work and how long they take, that there was no thought of COVID when these contracts were drawn up. This was, you know, this movie's actually been delayed because of COVID. It was supposed to come out, you know, middle of 2020, and they've pushed it trying to save their asses. So I think when these contracts were written, there was no world in which you would ever drop a brand new Marvel Universe movie on a streamer.
It's interesting, though, but everybody knows that you're going to be streaming at some point. And there's been so much talk about whether and the streaming wars, just an interesting kind of a play. And I wonder who wrote the contract for. I'll have to dig into that as well, because at some point that's there. I would imagine that if Disney is putting out how much she made, that there's probably already some bad blood there, because that, as you indicated, that's generally not something where you would want to put it out if it's somebody you want to work with going forward. So, the Cassowitz firm is known to play rough and tumble. And so maybe that's part of the reason why, because it sure sounds like that's something that you would want to have some kind of control over, because streaming is something. It's not like streaming wasn't thought of, and it's not like the Disney hasn't been making huge moves when it comes to streaming.
Well, sure, but I think that at the time that these contracts were written, when COVID wasn't a consideration, you would think, you know, 6 months down the line after a theatrical release, yes, the movie will go on to a streaming service of some sort. But I don't think that there was, at that time, there wasn't even an idea that you would drop a movie on a streamer for $30 that's available the same day you can go see it into a theater. That model just didn't exist.
Well, first off, would a firm like this, they would take it on contingency?
Probably not. There's only a couple of large firms that do significant contingency work. And I shouldn't say that, because I've co-counseled with Cassowitz's firm on matters in the past, and they did have contingency. But I can't imagine on a case like this that they would with her, because I've got to imagine that it's a significant amount of money that's at issue. And she's probably done the calculations, or her people have, and they probably said, why are we going to give away 45% or 40% if we could just pay the hourly on something like this? Because I can't, you know, one of the things, as you know, Adam, better than most people, one of the things that deals in Hollywood for years, decades, have always not been litigated or tried not to be litigated in civil court because there's just a different way that Hollywood operates. And every time they do get litigated, I think of an arbitration award that just came down from Judge Lichtman. But when they do get litigated, they can go south in a hurry. And they know that. Studios know that.
Well, how much did she get paid? I'm dying to know.
$20 million was her fee.
For the movie.
For the movie. And Disney put that out in their response to her lawsuit. So that was how that number came out. And then she had back end points as well.
So they're saying we're parting ways. Unless there's some reason I can't think of.
I don't know if they're parting ways, but I think the $20 million was meant to shame her and meant to turn the court of public opinion against her and basically say, why are you complaining about money when we gave you $20 million?
Right.
And then they, in their statement, they also are playing the COVID-19 card and basically saying, why are you asking about money when people are, that money would be based on people risking their lives to go to a theater. And it's, right. You know, it seemed prepared and it came out quick. Like she sued on, what's today? So she sued, I believe, on like Thursday morning, at, you know, 8 or 9 Pacific time. And by noon, the Disney statement was out.
Is she trying to get whatever, you know, so the way you would figure this out if you had a steno pad is your average blockbuster Marvel movie drops how many percentage points from week one to week two. Also, you'd probably factor in that this is being well reviewed, that if the thing was a stinker, you know, was under 50% on Rotten Tomatoes, it would be a larger gap. So you'd have to find another movie that was sort of reviewed similarly with the same sort of scores. And then you'd go, how much did that drop from week to week? And whatever that percentage is, that's what we're going off of, because there is no such thing as actually knowing what it would have done the next week since you guys opened it up on streaming. And here's, you know, it dropped 29%. Normally it drops 16%. So we want 12% of that or 13% of that back end.
Right. The analysis you've just given is what an expert would attempt to testify to.
And she's going to go, I want a few more bucks for the hassle.
I mean, well, she's going to be there. There's going to be probably some kind of provision to say, well, this is very hard to approximate. And by the way, that can be a reason to try to strike an expert's testimony that is speculative.
Well, this has just jumped into my head. I don't know if Gary's heard of it. Maybe Mark did. The Kyrie Irving shoe thing.
Oh, yeah. I'm well aware of that story.
Are Mark's aware of that?
No. Tell me about it.
Kyrie Irving.
Well, this is, the reason I'm bringing it up is because it's kind of the reverse of what we're talking about. Yep. This is Disney throwing shade at
Scarlett Johansson.
A client or employee or whatever. And then Kyrie Irving had Nike make him a shoe and basically said, this looks like shit. I wouldn't wear it.
Now, not to correct you, but he called them trash, which I would say is even harsher in internet parlance.
Called them trash.
Yeah.
Called them trash. Wow.
And now, obviously, now it's going the other direction now, but Nike spends a whole bunch of money making a shoe for an NBA star, and he just goes to Twitter and calls it trash. They have to, I mean, obviously they paid him.
I'm surprised by that because my experience has been that when they've got a shoe, that usually the athlete is intimately involved in the design and the kind of production at all the critical stages.
Usually they are, but that was part of his statement, was basically that they did this without him. He caught wind of it, saw it, told them he didn't like it and he didn't want it released, and they told him to go pound sand. And so he's just basically coming out and saying, I was not involved with this at all. I personally think they're garbage and I don't like them, but you know, do you?
Yeah.
That's very interesting. That's an interesting, I'd love to know the facts behind that. Whether he was involved, whether he wasn't involved, whether he was in a meeting, whether he went to Beaverton or wherever they had the design meeting or in New York, and whether he actually saw the prototypes. There's no litigation surrounding that?
It's probably going to be.
Not yet.
Not yet. It just dropped. And then there is the other story you're speaking of with the trademark in the Indians. It's crazy that in this day and age where everyone has a computer on their phone, that they don't just Google stuff in before you get the hats
and
made up with the logo, right?
And that is exactly the point that Mark's associate, Dan Lust, who I'm a big fan of on Twitter, has been highlighting. And he's basically been championing this roller derby league that holds the name, basically saying, like, get your money. Like, these people screwed up. They didn't do their job. Get your bag, son. Like, they're going to make a lot of money on this.
And they are a smile upon the face of everyone who watches Sean Hannity right now. When they hear these kind of stories, they just fucking love it. This is right up there with the defund the police mayor getting mugged in the park. They love these stories.
The part about it for someone like me that's amazing is, like, you had the time and the thought and the forethought to hire Tom Hanks to voice your video announcing this.
Right.
How much did you pay him that you are now going to have to pay through the nose because no one Googled?
And also, Drew Carey wasn't available. I mean,
that's a fair point.
All anyone said was, what's Tom Hanks have to do with Cleveland?
Yeah, that was a question.
All right, let me hit BetterHelp here. I'll let Mark's blowing up. I'll hit BetterHelp over here, and we'll keep the train rolling. Reasonable Doubt is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. As we see the light at the end of the COVID tunnel, many are still feeling emotionally out of sorts. You may not feel depressed, but maybe your relationships are suffering, or you feel some anxiety, or struggling with your career, have trouble sleeping. You should talk to somebody. Visit BetterHelp.com/reasonable doubt. Fill out a questionnaire and help them assess your needs and match you with a professional, licensed therapist. Start communicating in under 48 hours via secure weekly video, phone, or even live chat sessions as well. It's easy and free to change your counselor if you need a better fit. Look, let's get your head together. So, when you do that, the rest of the world kind of falls in line. It's BetterHelp, right, Gary?
That's absolutely right. Online therapy is convenient and more affordable than in-person therapy. And our listeners get 10% off their first month of online therapy at BetterHelp.com/reasonable doubt. That's BetterHelp.com/reasonable doubt.
Well, that's a great sponsor.
Yeah, we can.
I'm now seeing news, by the way. It's unclear if it's related, but Kyrie Irving fired his management the day after he called his shoes trash. So he has departed from Roc Nation, which was his management, which is the Jay-Z owned sports management company.
Well, can we talk about Mark's airplane for a minute?
Please.
Because words must be exchanged. So I walked out of the studio the other day on Thursday, and I do not bring my phone in studio. It's just a habit of mine. Otherwise you'll end up like Dr. Drew, just arguing with people on Twitter and not listening to the callers. But I leave my phone. I walked out. I saw a message from Mark that was sent moments earlier when I rebooted my phone, and it said, do you want to take Big Boy, the big airplane, to Vegas? Because this weekend is Cousin Sal's 50th birthday party, and Jimmy's going and all the crew's going, and we're going to have a good time. And I just wrote back, shit, yeah. And then I called Mike August, because Mike's going to the wedding as well. To the party as well. And Mike's very intimate with Mark and his plane and very on top of things. And as suspected, and Mark mentioned, I don't know if I got hold of Mike or not. I'm not sure if I got the right number.
Just as little background, as I was texting, usually August is Johnny on the spot, especially yes. If it's airplane related.
Yeah, I know. So then I called Mike and I said, did Mark hit you about the airplane? And he said, yeah, he did. And then he went, boy, it'd be great to avoid LAX, because he was leaving out of LAX. And I said, yeah, it would. And then he goes, what do you think? And I said, I don't know. We should pay for gas or something, right? And he goes, yeah, I don't know. What's gas cost and something like that? And then he goes, $5,000. And I go, it's more. It's got to be more. It's more. Everything's more. And he's like, yeah, but I don't know. What is he offering the plane up? Or is he saying you want to rent it? Like, what's he saying? I said, I don't know. I'll call Mark. I'll send Mark a text. I'll get back to you. So then I sent Mark a text. And then Mark said, no, plane's yours. Do what you want. And there's also a chapter here that you're unaware of, Mark, but I'll then I wrote back, and I was standing in the back of the shop, and I said, I have to try to craft something to Mark. I don't want to take his plane for free. It doesn't feel right. It's very generous, but it doesn't feel right. So I wrote, thank you, but if it's just for us to go to Vegas and you're not going and there's no other business, then I don't feel comfortable doing this. And then I stopped and I looked at the word comfortable. I thought, you don't talk that way, Adam. And Mark's going to read that and he's going to think someone else wrote it for you. But I thought, I'm professional. I'm trying to be professional here. And I... comfortable is the right word. That's what a thoughtful professional person would say. I do not feel comfortable with your generosity. And then Mark wrote back and he went, I'll tell you a story. Don't worry about it. You guys can take the plane. And what the fuck was up with the word comfortable? I just wrote, I know. I stopped. I looked at it. I knew you'd say something. I just sent it. So then.
And decades I've known you, and I've never heard you worry about comfortable.
Right. It's a dumb word. I should have never done it. So I thought it made me sound more professional. So then, and here's my mistake. So I then said, great. Thanks. So I said to Matt, cancel my flight to Vegas. And he said, what about the flight coming home? And I said, oh, no, I need the flight coming home. We're just getting a ride to Vegas. And in my mind, this is my fault. I didn't ask, but I've been used to catching rides with Mark on his plane, sometimes his son Jake and company. And my rhythm was, you're catching a ride to Vegas, and then the plane's going off to Tennessee or New York, or it's just parts unknown. So that was the rhythm. So I said to, then I went back to Mark, and I said, oh, Mark, do we have the whole plane? Because if so, I got to call Jimmy and Cousin Sal and Danny Two Sheets, and I want to fill the plane up. So Mark said, you got the whole plane, 10 seats. So then I got off the phone and then I said, I called, I hit Jimmy and Sal immediately. And they said, we're both in Vegas now. And I said, well, drive home. I got a private plane. you don't want to miss this. So he said, they said, thanks. We're both in Vegas. You know, hit Daniel. So then I hit Daniel up and I said, Daniel, you and your wife, Diane, you want to come on? I got a plane. Mark Garagos gave me a plane. You want to go on the plane? He said, yeah. What time are we leaving? What time are we coming back? I said, oh, no, we're not coming back. It's a one-way trip. And he said, all right, let me see what I can do. And then he got back. He said, I can't cancel one leg of the trip because we upgraded to first class and they won't let you cancel the way in or they'll cancel the way out. I was like, oh, shit. All right, well, you're out. Fine. I called. That's what they said. I called.
Wait. Don't you just sacrifice the ticket, though?
I don't know. It was like.
I want to beat him up for that. That's weird.
I want to beat him up, too, because he got out of the gate with, well, we already got a car and we already got our tickets. And I was just like, all right, we'll cancel everything and get on the plane. But I will weave his wife into this. I won't blame him. But I think she was like, well, how are we going to rebook? You know, whatever. I said, fine, you're out. So then I called Scott Holmes, Grizzlies, a friend of watches football with me every weekend, good guy, and friend of Sal's. And I just called him. I said, Scott, are you going to this? You're going to Sal's party? He's like, yeah. I go, all right, where are you flying out of? Burbank. All right, Southwest. Good. Cancel the flight out. Keep the flight back. That's what I did. Okay. You're in. All right, you're in. All right. So I'm walking around last night at like 9:30. I get the call from Mike. Mike's like, I need the manifest. How many people on the flight? What's going on? I go, and then he goes, and what time do you want to come back? I go, well, you know, you're on your own on the way back. Everyone's got their own ticket back. I don't know. Daniel's leaving in the morning. I'm leaving in the afternoon. I don't know when your ticket back is, Mike. And he goes, oh, I canceled everything. And I said, well, you need a flight back. We're just flying in. Mark's letting us fly in on his plane, but he's not flying us back. So, and Mike's like, oh, I canceled my flight back. And I said, oh, I think you should rebook that flight. I think we're just flying in. And he goes, wait a minute. Aren't we flying round trip? And I go, I don't know. I never thought about it. I thought we're just flying in because we fly in. Mark drops us off and then the jet goes somewhere else. More important. And he goes, oh, no. And I go, I don't know. You better find out. So then he finds out that it is a round trip. And then I go, oh, shit, I got to call Daniel. I got to get on the phone with Daniel now because I got to tell him now scrub all your shit. And smash cut, Daniel's going and Mike's going and the Grizz is going and so on and so forth. But I never got the story from Mark as to why he's being so generous with this airplane and why this is acceptable.
Which you're gonna have to wait until next week's Beyond for me to tell you, because there's two court appearances between now and then, which will make it, which will explain it.
Okay. Well, yeah. Either way. Thank you.
My big regret is that Big Three was supposed to be in Vegas, but is now going to be in Dallas. But also, I've got my anniversary, which we're taping this on Friday, which is tonight. So I'm going to celebrate with my bride of 33 years tonight.
Ironically, got a text from her last night, unrelated to this, but as I was trying to sort through all this stuff, I got a text from her. She said, I heard you didn't like the fish at the wedding. Was there something wrong with your fish?
That's the best. I think what I said to her is, you know, when they brought out the salmon, I was thinking, all this, the money flying out the door and we're serving salmon. And I think I turned to you and you said something like, yeah, why? What's with the choice for salmon? You had a more. You didn't say it was cheap. Yours was more. Is this the best way to kind of meet everybody's dietary needs? You had a very, you know, between that conversation and your comfortable use of comfortable, there really is kind of a different side of you.
There's an erudite side of me that is shining through my older age. No, I had returned from King King Salmon Lodge that day at noon, the day of the wedding. I'd come from a place that had the word salmon carved into the sign on the roof, and I'd literally unloaded a cooler of salmon that we'd caught over the last 4 days. I was getting out of the car, so of course, when I ran into the salmon, it was comical to me, obviously, but
especially because you Drew and I were discussing the apex predator bear who sits at the kind of the throat of where it can grab the salmon as yes. well. And then
yes,
here you go.
In days of yore, you, me, and Drew would have been that bear.
Right.
Now we're just sitting in the ranger's office getting yelled at. But I immediately got back to Paulette as fast as I could because I was like, oh, no, she thinks I got some bad salmon and I'm complaining about it, whatever. But that was funny that text arrived right in the midst of trying to sort out the whole flight.
Sort out the whole flight situation.
So it was a Garrigus clusterfuck going on my phone. So, yeah.
Which did you feel less comfortable about, the salmon or the
I well the there is trip? there there is that thing where people send you a text and they go, oh, I heard you talking about, or they misunderstood something, or their feelings have been hurt, or they've been offended, or they want to know if there's an issue. And it's like time stands still at that point. Or actually, time doesn't stand still. Time powers forward. Like, oh, they texted me 28 minutes ago and they're having all these bad thoughts. Like, I can't type fast enough to tell them it was a joke, you know, nothing personal. It was, I just got back from salmon fishing. No, it has nothing to do. It's in no way a indictment of
the meal that was served.
None whatsoever. All right. Should we do our last story, which is that story?
I'd just like to say my salmon was delicious.
It was.
Mr. Gary, I'll pass that along.
So we sort of already covered the broad strokes. I wonder if maybe in a future Beyond or a future full episode of Reasonable Doubt, we shouldn't have Mark's associate on to give his detailed analysis. But basically, the Cleveland Guardians now are basically in real trouble because they named their team that and did not apparently do the due diligence to realize there's a roller derby league that holds that name and all of the associated websites, social accounts, and trademarks.
So, Mark,
it's just wild to me. I mean, the idea that you're in a market that has a team which presumably has been around for how many years, and nobody thought of this?
The roller derby team. It would be interesting to know if they're old school roller derby or sort of nouveau upstart roller derby. Either way,
old school Dick Lane style.
Yeah, skinny Minnie Miller and the rest of the Kansas City Bombers or the L.A. God damn it. I can't think of their name.
The Thunderbirds?
Yeah, the Thunderbirds. Right. It used to be a thing. It would show up on Saturday mornings, you know.
Oh, my God. I used to watch it. Dick Lane. It was the greatest when they would do the whip.
Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah, it seemed very cooked, but very entertaining. It was basically pro wrestling on four wheels or eight wheels, actually. But so here's the question, Mark. If you are representing the ladies from the roller derby or the fellas or whoever that entity is, you have to be thinking to yourself, it's going to take a lot for them to undo the Cleveland Guardians, like the hats, the merch, you know, the stuff. I mean, it's going to be tough to unring that bell. And to unring that bell, there's going to be a number you could assign to that.
And what would that number
that's going to be expensive. And, you know, we're roller derby league. We're not flush with cash. It can be.
I'd like to point out an unexpected detail here. It is a men's roller derby league, and it appears that this team has been in operation using that name for at least 5 or 6 years.
Okay. So now, Mark.
What's the number?
Well, not. I don't expect you to come up with that off the top of your head, but what I'm saying is the men's league saying to themselves now, oh, this is good because we're not going to fight to keep our name. We're going to let them make a case to buy our name.
That's exactly what they're going to do. I mean, they've got one or two options, three options that I can think of. A, there's a number for which they would say we'll change our name, meaning the Roller Derby League. Is that number 5, 10, 15, 20 million bucks? Or they sell the league to the football team. The football team says, we'll buy your league. What's your league value at? And I could see where that could be.
Oh, baseball. Sold. Baseball team. Sorry.
Baseball team.
Right.
And so they just buy it. I mean, that to me makes the most sense. They got to value that league at X amount of dollars. By the league, and the last is if for some reason you really are wedded, and I can't imagine why this would be. If you've only been around for 5 or 6 years, I just don't see where somebody's going to say, "No, I'm going to fight. I'm going to make them change the Cleveland Indians. I'm going to make them change their name instead." to something that's not the Guardians.
The Spiders. Yeah.
No, I don't see a world like that. I see the baseball team absorbing the league, you want to get really creative, sign a sponsorship deal for the league. I'm sure the league has cash flow issues, and one way to solve that would be for the new baseball Guardians to become sponsors of the men's roller derby.
Can I ask a question here? Mark, if you are advising the Washington football team, who is in the process of doing this exact same thing, would this give you pause as to rolling out your plan change for your team names?
Well, I certainly would invest in a Google search. I mean, there's a trademark, patent, IP lawyer in the mix somewhere when they did this. I mean, as you said, if they're hiring Tom Hanks, I can't imagine that there's not an intellectual property component to the legal team that's advising them. And how did that get past them?
It's the weirdest thing in the world because, 15 times a day, every American says to another American in a corporate or business type situation where they go, oh, I got this idea for Tabasco that comes in a pistol and it comes with a holster and you could squirt it on your eggs.
Tabasco Pal.
Yeah, actually, that's not bad. And I do that all the time. And then I go, wait a minute, that shit must exist. That Gary, Google and hot sauce pistol squirt gun or squirt gun pistol. Sure enough, there's 48 offerings on Amazon, and I didn't think of shit. But I don't go, get the molds and the extruder out. We're going into production. I go look that shit up and see if there is such a thing. You know what I mean? Like,
it's inexplicable to me. There's, it's to kind of adopt one of your favorite things. There's got to be more to this story. I mean, there has to be more to this story.
I came up with a better one. Tabasco.
Tabasco. Hot sauce and a gun. And also, hey, if you're a lady walking alone in the park at night.
That's safety, baby.
That's safety. All right, let me hit Geico. Do you rent your home? Well, you do one or the other. And then there's your automotive policy. How about you get your bundle going? Geico makes it easy to take your homeowner's, your renter's insurance and bundle it up with your automotive policy. When you bundle, you save. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the home. So, go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could be saving when you get your bundle working at Geico. That is geico.com. All right, August 27th, 28th, Minneapolis, Minnesota. The shows are selling out, I just found out the other day. So maybe we'll add another one. I don't know, but get on it if you want to go.
Mark, you notice that Adam's pulling up a few minutes early here? It's almost like he's got a private plane to catch.
Yeah. And you go to mcroll.com for all the live shows, and you can check out our chassis channel on Pluto TV. Channel 687 and Reasonable Doubt, our YouTube channel, youtube.com/ReasonableDoubt podcast. What do you got, Mark?
We've got get up to Capri in Southampton and visit Naya tonight. Saturday night's always hopping there. Go and get to the V, Palm Springs, and visit the pool and drench yourself. Get down to Casa Tropicana in San Clemente or downtown to Tenney, or for Mediterranean Tapas or Engine Company 28. You can climb the pole if you've had a couple of
So thanks again, Mark. We'll talk
fun. Say hi to soon. Captain.
Say hi to Paulette and have a wonderful evening. Until next time, Sam Corolla for Mark Garrigo saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.
Well, do you own, do you rent your home? Probably do one or the other. And then you got your automotive policy. How about you bundle them up at Geico? Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners and renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing because you got so much to do already. So go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save when you get your bundle on with Geico. That is geico.com.